www.ww.org and click on the Events tab.
I'm Rob Wood. As an economist talks about when failure is a good thing. That's ahead in 20 minutes here on KUOW.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Why do some of us turn out gay and some of us turn out straight? Neuroscientist Simon LeVay has done groundbreaking work in answering these questions. In 1991, his study reported on the differences in brain structure between gay and straight men. In his new book, Gay, Straight, and the Reason Why, Simon LeVay looks at some of the latest scientific research on sexual orientation. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you, Ross. Great to be here.
Your research in neuroscientists suggests that not only do the brains of gay men not look different than the brains of straight men, that was your revelation back in 1991, but their brains operate differently. How so?
Well, technology has advanced a lot since the early 90s. The study that I did back then was an autopsy study looking at the brains of people who had died, and I found a difference in a part of the brain called the hypothalamus that contributes to our sex lives, helps regulate our sex lives. But now we can actually look inside the brains of living people and see the actual activity patterns in the brain while they're alive. And that has shown that there are, in fact, differences in the way the brains behave of gay and straight people that go far beyond simply brain structure.
What kind of things?
Well, one study that's been done by a group in Sweden was actually to take substances that are thought to be human sex pheromones, substances that are released into the air from the skin and that affect the mood or feelings or behavior of other people who smell them, purify them, and then present them to the noses of some unfortunate volunteers who are inside a what's called a positron emission tomographic scanner, a brain scanner, basically. Mm-hmm. And what they find is that, first of all, there are sex differences in how the hypothalamus responds to these substances, but also differences between gay and straight people of the same sex in the way that you might imagine, so that a substance that's released by men seems to activate certain parts of the hypothalamus in heterosexual women and gay men, but not in straight men or lesbians.
You know, there are some who believe that our sexual orientation is along a continuum. On the one end, people who are very straight. On the one end, people who are very gay. But most of us maybe somewhere along the way, in the middle, perhaps bisexuals. What do you think about that idea?
There's an important difference between the sexes. Men, by most ways you measure it, men are pretty much dichotomous. Most men, the great majority of men, are close to the straight end or close to the gay end of the spectrum. You don't get a lot of bisexual men, depending how you measure it, although there definitely are some. With women, some people argue that all women are bisexual. That's probably an extreme point of view, but certainly there are many more bisexual women than bisexual men, and there's more changes in sexual orientation over the lifespan among women than you see among men.
Is there any biological information that might inform why that would be, why the sexes would be different in that way?
Not really. At this point, there may be a stronger genetic influence on sexual orientation in men than in women, and that may be part of the reason. There really do seem to be gay genes that are playing an important role in men's sexual orientation. Genes influence women's sexual orientation, but not as strongly, so it may be more room for other factors to operate, and because you have multiple factors, you may end up with more women being sort of capable of feeling attraction to both sexes.
Now, I understand that the research that you've looked at would suggest that the biology of sexual orientation begins to come into play even before we're born?
Absolutely. Most of the evidence points in that direction. And when I say the evidence, I mean animal studies, for example, that show that you can strongly influence the ultimate sexual orientation of an animal, what sex of partner it would like to mate with, if you manipulate the sex hormones that are circulating in the fetus when the brain is first assembling itself, which in humans would be well before birth. So, and there's evidence that this applies to humans too. It's indirect evidence looking at markers, anatomical markers such as finger length ratios, arm length, brain structure, other things that point towards this early developmental period as being the key phase when sexual orientation is influenced by these biological factors.
It's kind of amazing. What kind of animals were they using for those experiments?
You can use all kinds of animals, actually. Rodents like rats and mice, pigs, various birds, and so on. It seems to be a rather common phenomenon that this, the early phase of brain differentiating in a more masculine or more feminine direction is when hormones can influence the ultimate sexual preferences of an organism when it's adult.
Why are you straight or why are you gay? That's the questions that Simon LeVay looks at in his new book called Gay, Straight, and the Reason Why, The Science of Sexual Orientation. You're probably familiar with Simon LeVay's work, even if you don't know the name. Back in 1991, his study reported on differences in the brain structure between gay and straight men, and a lot of research has been done since then, and we're talking about some of that research. We're also going to talk about the things that we don't know about sexual orientation. Well, for example, does sexual orientation change in a person over time? Do they ever go from gay to straight or vice versa?
It's more common that people go from straight to gay, particularly among women. There are quite a few women later in life, 30s, 40s or later, who become aware of sexual attraction to women in a way that they were absolutely not before. It comes to them as a complete surprise. With men, many men come out as gay later in life, but if you ask them what were they doing all that time before, they'll usually say, yes, I was aware of being attracted to men, but I couldn't deal with it. I wanted to have a regular family or whatever. So it's, or I was being, I wasn't being open about it. And so men, it's a matter of admitting something they knew all along. With women, it seems to be something completely novel to them, a real change of sexual orientation.
You write that there are these biological factors to sexual orientation, the genes, sex hormones, cells, but you also say there are environmental factors. How do the nature and nurture factors interact when it comes to sexual orientation?
Well, we don't really know definitively about environmental factors. It used to be thought, of course, there were Freudian theories of parental treatment as being the key thing. A distant or hostile father might, or a close-binding mother might make a son gay, for example. That's generally been discredited now. It's thought mostly that Freud misunderstood the direction of cause and effect. In other words, that children might already be different when they're very young, children who later become gay. And this sets up certain relationships with the parents that Freud noticed, but he thought it was the parents causing that in the kids. In animal experiments, there are studies suggesting that stress on the mother during pregnancy can have effects of the kind we're talking about, changing hormone levels and ultimately predisposing one of those fetuses to become homosexual when it's adult. But there's no evidence. In fact, there's evidence against the idea that that mechanism operates in humans. So we don't think that stress, prenatal stress, is a causal factor. Where the environment comes in really is what we do with our sexuality. You know, we think of sexual orientation as being a matter of feelings, who you're actually attracted to. But what you do with those feelings in terms of your actual sexual behavior, how you identify and so forth, what communities you join, there's, of course, a tremendous amount of environmental influence there from parents, churches, and so forth.
You recount some research in Canada showing something of a link between birth order and the likelihood that a boy becomes gay. What's that research?
That's right. That's fairly recent research that I didn't know about back in the early 90s, and it only applies to men, that men who have an older brother are significantly more likely to be gay than men who don't have an older brother. And you might think that would be an environmental influence. Somehow the presence of the older brother in the family would predispose the younger brother to be gay, perhaps because the parents would somehow sort of allow the younger brother to be different in some way. But actually, it seems to be a biological effect involving the mother's immune system. That's at least the current theory, because you see this effect, according to the Canadian researchers, even if the man never lived with his older brother, even if they were separated at birth and adopted out of the family, they still show this effect of an older brother. Now, it's not like you're certain to be gay if you have an older brother. It's quite a weak effect, actually, but it's consistent from study to study to study. So there's something going on there.
Weak, meaning it has some kind of an influence, but it's not determinative.
Right. It's probably... it may account for about a quarter, if you like, of the total amount of homosexuality in the population. Probably not more than that, maybe a little bit less. So it's not the leading factor, probably.
What's the relationship, if any, between sexual orientation and transgendered people who feel as though they're born into the wrong body?
Well, this is a controversial topic. The way I see it is there's a sort of continuum or spectrum running from, let's say, at one end, rather conventionally gendered gay people. Let's take men, conventionally masculine gay men. Then going through rather more unmasculine or even feminine gay men, and then going transitioning, if you like, to men who really feel they are, in fact, women. So there's a spectrum and a no man's land between gay men, if you like, and male to female transgenders or transsexuals. Now, not everyone likes that view of things, but I think it probably is true, and there's some commonality. For example, a Dutch group has recently shown that this part of the brain that I studied in the gay men is also smaller in male to female transgenders compared with heterosexual men. So there's a brain marker that's actually the same in gay men and in male to female transgenders.
We're talking today with Simon LeVay. The book is called Gay, Straight, and the Reason Why, the Science of Sexual Orientation. To many people in this country, they still think that sexual orientation is a matter of choice, that someone who is gay chooses to be gay. Some people believe that you can reprogram someone's sexual orientation. If they don't want to be gay, they can go through a treatment and get out of that. What does the science say in the last years since you did your original study about that being a matter of choice?
I don't think anyone who researches this subject, any scientist, certainly any biologist, thinks that choice comes into sexual orientation. When I'm talking about sexual orientation as the sexual feelings of attraction that you experience, choice comes into what you do with those feelings, not in terms of your actual feeling attracted to men or to women. Now, as to the question of whether you can change your sexual orientation through some sort of therapy or something, right now there is no such method. I hope in a sense that there never is, because I don't see any reason why people should want to change their sexual orientation. But I suppose theoretically at some distant point that might become possible through some biological strategy or other.
What remain the big mysteries about sexual orientation? You've been looking at this for a long time. What are the things that still really puzzle you?
Well, I think mostly the difference between men and women is very striking, and that's something we really don't understand in great detail. Why is it that women have a much more fluid sexual orientation? Why is their sexual orientation less genitally focused? In men, you know, you can measure genital arousal with, you know, like a little blood pressure cuff you put around the penis. You can pretty much diagnose a man's sexual orientation by seeing what arousal he has to male and female images. With women, quite the reverse. You really don't see any differences between heterosexual and lesbians on the basis of what kind of genital arousal they show to different kinds of erotic images.
Do we just not have the measuring tool yet? Or
no, you can measure sexual arousal in women actually pretty well. Little photo electrode things that measure the changes in the blood as it circulates through the genitals that measure arousal. It just doesn't seem to be specific in the way that it is in men. So, I mean, you know, to put it crudely, a man can tell his sexual orientation by consulting his genitals, so to speak. I mean, whereas a woman certainly cannot do that. And so the reason for that is really not known.
So that's one of the mysteries that still puzzle you.
Yeah.
What are some of the other things that are out there that really have not been determined yet?
Well, I think, you know, the fact we know that genes exist to influence sexual orientation, but we don't know what the genes are. And molecular geneticists have been trying to actually identify the specific genes, but so far without success. So we want to know, are they genes that influence the levels of sex hormones during brain development? Do they perhaps influence the way the brain responds to sex hormones? Do they work through some mechanism that is going to completely surprise us? You know, we don't know.
There have been great advances in looking at our DNA and all of the elements which make up who we become. Does any of that research go towards the direction of defining the questions of sexual orientation and why it's one way or the other?
Well, behavioral genetics is a lively science. There's lots of evidence now for genes influencing behavior. But once you get to the molecular aspect of it, it's been frustrating. There's very few genes actually have really been gotten into a bottle. You can say this is a gene that influences some particular aspect of our mental life. And there's a lot to be done yet to actually answer those questions.
Wasn't there a buzz at one point about the gay gene?
Well, the gay gene is just shorthand for the fact that genes do influence sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. We know that from family studies and twin studies, which many have been done now. But that's a far cry from actually knowing what gene does what, when it works, how it works, what part of the body it works. These are unanswered mysteries.
Brad asks, have you found any link between sexual orientation and handedness, I guess left-handedness or right-handedness?
There are, in men, there is a slight difference if you look at large numbers of people, with gay men being slightly more likely to be left-handed or mixed-handed compared with heterosexual men. It's a pretty small effect, but when you do these big internet studies and have 100,000 subjects, it jumps out of the data pretty strongly.
What happens when you line up these various factors? Left-handed, mother-stressed, some of the other factors that you've mentioned have a weak correlation to sexual orientation. If there are a bunch of those together, does that mean that that is more likely, or are they all separate?
Actually, in some cases, they cancel out, which is rather strange. So sometimes you can pick two of these factors that seem to go along with an increased risk of being gay. And if you have both of them together, you're actually not likely to be gay. And the way that scientists try and interpret this is to say that one might cause rather low levels of testosterone during development, which puts you in a sort of gay range. The other might put you in a high range, which might also predispose to homosexuality. But if you have both, that puts you smack in the sort of the quote the usual typical average range, and so you end up straight. That's just a sort of a way of trying to understand the data that doesn't really have much definite science behind it.
Neuroscientist Simon LeVay talking with us about his latest book, Gay, Straight, and the Reasons Why, The Science of Sexual Orientation. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.
Next up on the